Welcome to the Ghost Rap Podcast. It's fast, it's fun, it's informative. This is your weekly dose of the news that matters on the markets with your host, the Finance Ghost. For more details on these stories and to make sure you get daily updates, visit ghostmail.co.za. The Ghost Rap Podcast is proudly brought to you by Mazars, a leading international audit, tax, and advisory firm with a national footprint within South Africa. As the old saying goes, when the sun is shining, you need to make hay. When the gold price is shining, you need to get the stuff out of the ground as quickly as possible and sell it. Unfortunately for Pan African Resources shareholders, that has not happened. Eskom is part of the problem, but there have also been production issues at Barberton Mines and geological issues at Evander Mines. This is such unfortunate timing for shareholders, as the gold price has been performing well recently, and especially when viewed in rands. The Pan African share price got absolutely smashed on the day of the announcement that full-year production guidance has been cut by roughly 12.5%. This takes the share price year-to-date performance to minus 6% at a time when Goldfields is up 56%, AngloGold 33%, and Harmony 50% over the same period. This is exactly why I don't believe in highly concentrated stock portfolios, as there is always the risk of something going horribly wrong at a company. It was reporting week for the HCI companies, and there are a few of them. Apart from Hoskin Consolidated Investments as the mothership, underlying groups Deneb, eMedia, and Frontier Transport are all separately listed. None of those three had an enjoyable time in the year ended March, and for different reasons, ranging from load shedding's impact on advertising at ETV through to fuel costs at Frontier and net finance costs at Deneb. But at the top of the pile, the numbers out of HCI were rather spectacular actually, with headline earnings up by 55%. Coal was a decent contributor here, but the biggest jump came from the hotel exposure in the group, swinging from a headline loss of 35 million rand to a headline profit of 286 million rand in the aftermath of COVID. There's no dividend from HCI for this period though, as cash will be used for investment in oil and gas prospects in Namibia. This really is one of the most interesting groups on the JSE. Speaking of hotel groups, Southern Sun reported higher EBITDA, and there's a rrr on the end of that as an industry standard metric, than in the 2020 financial year, even though occupancy in the latest financial year was only 51.5% versus 59.3% in the year ended March 2020. And of course, pre-COVID is the right comparison here to see whether tourism has actually recovered. Bulls in this sector point to this as an opportunity, that occupancy rate being lower than pre-pandemic levels, arguing that of course there's still room for improvement, but bears may argue that some business travel is simply gone forever. Now there is evidence to back that up, as the Sandton node is still underperforming pre-COVID levels. Sandton has been struggling to recover, with a severe impact on major office property owners in the area. Hybrid working has definitely had an impact. I am sad to report that Datatech has discovered the scourge of adjusted EBITDA, a metric that is simply adored by global technology companies who use it to try and make their numbers look better by sweeping the true cost of staff under the carpet. You see, these technology companies love adjusting for the IFRS 2 expenses that are related to share-based compensation. Now, in simple terms, that means employees receiving share options or similar benefits linked to the share price. And adjusted EBITDA tries to pretend that that never happened. Now, of course, that's nonsense, because shareholders are diluted by these options issued to staff. And if the options weren't there, it's quite likely that Datatech would have to pay higher cash amounts to staff to retain them instead. This is, of course, a genuine cost of doing business, not something that can just be ignored. I, however, completely ignore adjusted EBITDA as a rule, focusing instead on EBITDA reported the correct way. From continuing operations, Datatech's EBITDA margin fell from 3.2% to 1.9%, but on an adjusted basis, it was magically 3.5%. So not only were the adjustments there in the first place, but they were clearly material, and they actually changed the narrative completely, making it even more of a concern for me that management is trying to take that route. Poultry businesses are getting smashed in this environment. At Astral, revenue increased by 5.7% in the 6 months to March, and it hardly mattered, with an 88% reduction in group operating profit. For context, operating profit in the comparable period was 785 million rand, and load shedding costs in this period were 741 million rand. So it's really no surprise that there wasn't much meat left on the chicken bones for shareholders. The poultry division made a loss of 283 million rand, and the feed division saved the day with a profit of 381 million rand. The balance sheet at Astral has taken substantial strain, putting the group into a large overdraft position at the end of March. And at Quantum Foods, even a revenue jump of 22% couldn't do it, as gross margin contracted and gross profit was only up by 6.6%. Once you take into account an increase in operating expenses of 8.4%, operating profit was hammered by 57.4%, and headline earnings per share, that was down by 82%. But here's the really bad news. Both companies have experienced an avian flu outbreak at farms in the Western Cape in April, and in both cases, that cost is not in these numbers that ended in March. To give context to just how severe it is, the cost to Quantum, for example, is 34 million rand, and headline earnings for the 6 months to March was just 6 million rand. Avian flu will be in the next set of numbers, which will probably look even worse than these. Share buybacks cannot do the heavy lifting for Lewis Group forever. With headline earnings per share up by 1% in the year ended March 2023 and headline earnings down by 9.8%. Now, the only reason HEPS growth was positive is because Lewis's share buyback program means that there are fewer shares in issue every year, which is why headline earnings and headline earnings per share can differ so significantly. The furniture retail industry in South Africa hasn't exactly been the most fertile ground for companies in recent years, and consumer pressures are biting here. Most clearly visible in cash sales moving firmly in the wrong direction. Group credit sales may have been up 18.1%, but cash sales were down 16.3%. Consumer discretionary spending is getting hit hard by interest rates and transport costs, particularly among lower income earners, and that is Lewis's core market. This week, I'm ending on Trematon, a company you may never have even heard of. The group owns Generation Education, Aria Property Group, and Club Mykonos in Lanabaan as its largest assets. This is an investment holding company, so intrinsic net asset value per share is actually the right metric to track. This is essentially the valuation of the underlying companies by the directors. Part of the year-on-year drop was due to a capital distribution to shareholders, which essentially makes the group smaller. But a big part of that drop was also because of valuation pressure on Club Mykonos and Generation Education, with the latter suffering slower student number growth and higher costs. As the largest asset in the group, contributing 40% of intrinsic NAV, shareholders do not want to hear about margin pressure at the schools. And that's a wrap. Please remember that nothing you hear on the Ghost Rap podcast should be taken as advice. Please do your own research and visit ghostmail.co.za for more insights into the market.